Everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. This is our audio game jam. My name is Ryan Heyman.
And I'm Ryan Quintel.
We are H and Q, respectively. And wow, I can't believe last Thursday that Nintendo Direct, that was incredible. We got to learn about, I couldn't imagine how many Smash Bros. Characters they were going to unveil in that one single Direct, which we have seen by now.
Yeah, you know what? You see all these characters roll out, you go, wow, everybody's in this Smash. And then comes this Direct. We realize they only revealed to us initially half the roster. Really crazy people in here.
Yeah, some really good picks in there too, like Commander Shepard, of course, from the Mass Effect series.
And of course, the Shadow player, Fem Shep, which is a really great, homage. Right, yep.
There's the Grinch, of course. Everyone was talking about that beforehand, so I guess that one got out somehow, but for me, I didn't see it coming. But quite frankly, I'm really happy that they got the Boris Karloff version. Rather than the newer Grinches or the Jim Carrey version. It's just, you know, the traditional one feels like it would have the most interesting moveset.
Now, you say what you want, but the fact that they've got the sort of PlayStation collaboration in there, you have your Nathan Drakes of the world, Kratos, of course, is in there, but I am going to put all my chips on Gordon Freeman. I cannot wait to suit up as this guy and kind of get that gravity gun going, get the whole thing going.
Yeah, and it's really great to see characters that have got cut from previous games. For instance, the entire Brady Bunch as the single collective character was supposed to be in the Smash 4, but they had to be cut because of the same reason that the Ice Climbers were, is because you can't handle that many characters on screen on the 3DS version specifically, but now with the power of the Switch, just imagine playing 8-player Smash all with Brady Bunch family.
Yeah, I mean, that. So what does that come out to, 40 players on screen at the time? I mean, I knew the Switch was a powerhouse, but okay, you play the Brady Bunch. I'm going to select, surprise, surprise, of course they were going to do the symmetry, the monkeys, because that Ultimate Smash move with the bus and the whole thing, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, and then of course there's the monkeys from Planet of the Apes, and you can choose the classic version with Charlton Heston or the new version. It feels a little indulgent to just include a whole bunch more monkeys when we already have Donkey Kong, Diddy
right.
Kong, Dixie Kong, Funky Kong, Cranky Kong, Kitty Kong, of course. It's always nice to see a little bit more primate love going on.
They have, at this point, totally smashed the Dota 2 character count. They've smashed the League of Legends character count. If this was a MOBA, and it isn't, but if it was, it would take you, the 10,000 hours of mastery at least.
We're still crunching the numbers to try to find out how many characters there actually are, but it might even be approaching the world record, which is previously held by the user-generated Mugen. So, jury's still out, but I'm sure a Game Explain video will take probably 7 hours to explain how many characters there are in this one. So look forward to that.
Yeah, and I'm not, I do not envy when you have to edit together the Kane and Rince review of this particular game. Yeah. It's going to be a long one.
It's going to be a long one, but I guess we will just count myself out of the office. I'll just take a sick week starting on December 7th and just kick back and play just a sliver of a percentage of the available characters.
Crazy.
It seems kind of pointless now that we have such ambitious project right on the horizon, but why don't you kick us off with a game idea today?
Okay, well, the game that I'm bringing you today is a little simple. I've been really focusing on people as of late and thinking through what it means to be people, and so you are, in this scenario, this is, I think, probably something that's been done before, but not quite at this level, manager of a space station or a planet or some intergalactic hub where many different species are all trying to coexist in peace, and you essentially have a detailed character creator at your fingertips, and you put together these characters a la spore creature creator, but we'll kind of confine them to mostly humanoid characters, although maybe we can expand upon that, not necessarily. But you're making a bunch of different types of aliens and alien races and introducing them into the population of your space station, and you're kind of watching your people of your space station, a lot of the races of which you've created yourself, live there and change the station's genetic makeup. So as people start to form relationships and make babies and all that kind of stuff, you're getting different types of alien species spawning. So you're kind of genetically pushing at the station in one direction or the next. And I'm sure we can figure out how to add more to that.
All right, starting the clock there. I guess, is the failure state kind of running out of genetic diversity until eventually your entire space station just becomes super inbred?
Yeah, I guess so. So you don't want to create species that are too similar. So you almost have to keep challenging yourself with this creator of sorts to keep doing something that is like markedly different from your last creation.
Okay. So now you said that one of the things you were thinking about is like what it's like to be a person or something like that. I don't remember the words exactly, but it's kind of an exploration of people. I guess, are these like animals that you're breeding, or are they like people that have identities and thoughts of their own, like Sims?
Well, yeah, I was thinking, and maybe this sounds less fun to some people, but I was thinking something a la The Sims, but maybe with less direct control of saying, hey, go to the bathroom, hey, go do your chores. You're creating these people and introducing them into the space station. So maybe they're already, you create a small group of fully formed adults based off of one character design. And when you introduce them into the space station, maybe you give them like different personality traits and stuff. And there's different bars. So you have to make trade-offs or whatever to what these personality traits are going to be. And you get to see not only biological effects, but sort of the programming effects of what happens if you introduce enough like aggressive groups into a space station, what kind of chaos ensues.
So it sounds almost like a fallout shelter or something like that, where you're kind of managing a group of people. Let's get back to this idea of breeding almost between species or between different groups. How do you introduce this diversity? Do you have to stumble upon these other species, these aliens that you'll be breeding with, or are these things that you are able to create and introduce at any time?
I was thinking about this for a little bit, and I was thinking that maybe it would be something like, as you introduce new species, like your space station is constantly, like the population is technically always going up, right? So maybe at different population milestones, you unlock new traits, or you just unlock certain milestones just to let you introduce a new population, and you get different points to say, okay, well, this rev through, it seems like the station is, you know, in need of some friendliness, or it needs a bit of a shakeup. People are a little lethargic. I'm going to introduce a contrasting species into the mix and see where it takes this thing.
It would be interesting if you had to gather the parts that you need to create these creatures. Like, that was the primary job that you make these creatures do. Like, whether they are zombies that you have to send them to graveyards to pillage, come back with body parts and brains and stuff, and then you can create them like Frankenstein monsters, stitching them all together, or whether they are like robots, kind of like Wall-E, where they go out into the world and they find robot parts and you choose what parts go together, and that kind of determines the personality of whatever results from it. And, you know, whether you choose to use a bunch of really low effectiveness, low profile parts to create the worker class, and then save the pristine parts for the class of robots that's going to kind of be the managerial level, or whether you try to spread the good parts evenly throughout the entire population, kind of make some choices that way.
As I thought this through, because some of this is inspired by Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which I've been watching a lot of recently, and in the Star Trek universe, there are some species that kind of can mate and produce children. There are some that are incompatible. So if there were different, depending on what you push your character creator into, you create a different like subtype of species or classification rather, like ABC, we'll say. And A can't mate with B, but it can mate with C and that sort of thing. Or has a very low chance of producing like an offspring or something with the other party. I thought it would be really special, right, to have these moments where you see a child born of two unlikely species and to see what that child looks like. And I think there's, maybe it's boring to think of, but there's a version of this where like the game ends where everybody's kind of a monospecies, right? And things kind of even mm-hmm. out and balance out. And maybe that's fine. Maybe there's a lesson to be had in that. But I think as a game, you want it to end in different ways. And, you know, introducing a species that maybe is, you know, too flat or too safe and you risk going extinct because your people just don't have the drive or the ingenuity to press on and prosper, or maybe you go too far in the other direction and you create an unbearable species that drives other species away, or an overly aggressive species that wipes another one of your species out.
Yeah, that would be interesting if you have to kind of balance in the prejudices that would naturally emerge in a situation in which, you know, if every creature is effectively unique, then, you know, they get along because there's no hierarchy. But as soon as patterns start to emerge, then they can start to classify themselves by those repeated elements, and they can start to form superiority or inferiority complexes when comparing against one another, just kind of like humans do with a lot of the kind of random physical traits that people are born with. And I don't know, there'd just be an interesting tale of trying to balance the, you know, maybe you do try to create a very monolithic strand of humanity that is not diverse, but it has a strong kind of internal core and will go out and, you know, conquer other species or whatever it takes, you know. So you can choose to either super specialize or maybe try to amp up the diversity.
Yeah, and I think you brought up an interesting point about biases, and like if this is in turn a interpersonal culture simulator of sorts, if you create a new type of species that's perhaps too unusual or too different, there could be, I don't know if it seems a little crude to just put a UI notation or something, but real effects of like, hey, life is going to be harder for this species because the rest of the people are not going to accept something that is this different. You can introduce it if you want, and it could have really great benefits, but those benefits are going to be way down the line and you're going to lose, you know, happiness or whatever your stats of measurement are in the meantime.
Maybe as you improve things, the creatures are getting better over time. I mean, the new creatures that you can create based on the new parts that you have or whatever, you're kind of gaining more and more powerful equipment. But the first few that you create become a minority group among the population that you've already created, and they're looked down upon or persecuted or even killed in some cases. And so it's about balancing and choosing when to introduce and choosing countermeasures to make sure that your entire population doesn't eat itself alive or try to enslave the new ones.
At one point, I know I started this pitch by saying an exotic character creator, because some of this came from, you know, sometimes in video games you can pick, oh, I have blue skin and I've got like super, you know, crazy body sort of measurements, and nobody really remarks on any of it, right? It's almost inconsequential. It's just a canvas in which you paint. But what if, isn't kind of an ending thought here, what if you put on, if the character creator was just entirely scientific? It was just you splicing together different DNA strands or something like that. And only once you're kind of locked in and you dial in those attributes, what comes out is a shock or a surprise or even a delight for you.
That's pretty good. Well, let's close that one down and let's come up with a name for it. What are we going to call this creature splicing game?
So my first thing that I wrote down here was coexist, but I think it would only be fun if we could draw it out with all those stupid emojis that you see on the back of bumper stickers.
I don't like those bumper stickers.
No, me neither.
It's the most like, I don't know. I just feel like it's a very rude sentiment because all it is, like, the message is nice. Like,
yeah.
Hey, religions, let's not kill each other. Let's all try to embrace what we have in common. But it comes off as very like diminutive, like, oh, all your religions, you're all made up anyways, so why don't you just, like, get over it?
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. What could we do that's better?
You can come up with a sequel to Spice World and call it Splice World. Of course, the PlayStation 1 Spice Girls video game.
Splice World is pretty good. Let's do it.
Let's move on to another game. I'm not 100% sure that we've not pitched something that's very similar to this, but let's give it a shot and see what happens. So this is a game that relies upon you having very good headphones or maybe a VR rig or something. But basically, you navigate a game world using only the audio. It's using 3D audio. You can hear like the hum of neon as you get close to it, or the buzzing of flies, or, you know, just whatever, all these things that would contribute to you finding your way around in the world, but completely blind. Does that sound familiar?
I mean, it sounds a lot like a bunch of things, but let's see where we can take it, right?
All right. Even if it is familiar, let's take it in a different direction. So let's start the clock there and see where we go with it, or not see, rather. Let's do that.
Cool. So my first remark is VR is so often, right? It's difficult when a technology is new to look past its immediate benefit, which is, I'm strapping a screen to my face, right? So I can immerse myself in all different ways. But as much as everything we do is an input, right? So as much as on this, the screen being on is a state, the screen being off is also a state. Like the idea that you could even create a horror game around literally turning off the lights in a video game and having someone seated in darkness in VR is very cool and scary. So I wonder if there's an element to this that can be like sight is taken away from you in moments. Like it's not always off, but you kind of, there's clues and indicators throughout the environment when you can see what direction sound is or what you might be seeing or feeling. Because I imagine you're going to still need to navigate it somehow, walk around.
Yeah, that would be interesting if maybe it's like a kidnapping thing where you get blindfolded and you get a sighted walkthrough of this place that you're in because, you know, you want to familiarize yourself with what the various audio cues mean. But, you know, after that, your hands are tied and basically you are blindfolded and left alone. You manage to kind of like pry your legs loose, but you just have to escape this facility, maybe a stealth type game, just using what you hear. And so you still navigate in the same, like using thumbsticks and stuff in 3D space, but you just can't see anything in front of you. And maybe it's completely dark. Maybe you can use that to your advantage. Maybe if you find out how to turn off lights, then it serves kind of a double advantage of taking away the vision of the guards around you. And it also removes the hum of the lights, which might be distracting to you and override other noises that are more useful for navigating a space.
You can see what's causing what, and you can use the times where you have sight to triage and help yourself or give yourself indicators. Maybe turning on a record player or something like, okay, well, I know that's on the left side of the room. So as I hear that, because 3D audio is a little, you know, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good.
That's interesting. Maybe there are some visual indicators of, well, yeah, I don't know, going back and forth on this, but if there are visual indicators of walls, kind of like you would see on a Vive, where they have the outward facing camera and they kind of give you a wireframe image of the room around you if you ever step too close to something, so you don't accidentally bash yourself on your desk while you're in VR. I like the idea of setting like audio landmarks for yourself. So if you turn on a record player in one room and then you follow a path and circle around into the vents and hear the record player loudly again, then you can kind of surmise that you're in the vents above the room that you were in before and try to make a 3D map.
Yeah, that's cool. Or even use the times where your sight, where you have sight to grab an object that has particular resonance, you know, and give you that kind of boost. So we've talked about maybe giving sight and taking it away. Is there like a level or a challenge or something to that? Or is, how do you feel like that translates there?
Well, I guess in a traditional horror game setup, like you could have portions of the game where your most valuable tool is taken away from you. You can kind of alternate between them. And maybe you're trying to escape monsters, kind of like in one of the Amnesia games. I feel like this type of mechanic would fit well with something like that. Trying to, as you said, when you have sight, maybe it's like points in the story, maybe not like a time limit thing, although maybe, well, I don't know. But maybe you can try to trigger things in the environment that will make noise so that you'll know where they are. So when you go into the blind state, which is where you spend the majority of your time, then you can kind of orient yourself based on those triggers that you've set up for yourself.
Could you imagine tying it to a Call of Duty Zombies or like a Gears of War Horde mode where you kind of have to hear where enemies are approaching and that sort of thing?
You know, I want to keep this relatively
controlled.
Enemy light. And so, you know, because the main challenge is navigation, it could be interesting to have maybe one or two roaming enemies like you would get in an Amnesia or Soma or Alien Isolation, but it wouldn't be like a heavily armed and guarded facility like a Metal Gear Solid that you're trying to get through, because you just don't really have all of the tools that you need to deal with that.
So as I'm exploring the environment, in your mind, is I'm trying to think, like, I'm using the Oculus controllers because, like, do I have a sensation? I don't. Do Oculus controllers, like, vibrate?
Yeah, they have vibration.
Okay. So, essentially, I'm moving around and maybe I could feel my way through. That's where I feel like the pitch is getting into maybe something we've talked about before, but I can't remember.
And what point specifically?
You use vibration to tell when you're kind of up against something.
Okay. Yeah, that's a nice way to do it as well. You know, obviously it's kind of difficult to communicate to the player like that a solid object can't be passed through because there's no real thing preventing them from just passing their hands through it anyways. But yeah, I think a vibration and maybe a really strong vibration if you are in an impossible space at that time. But your hands can move freely and feel the world around you while your body, which is controlled with the stick, could be kind of stuck to the physical spaces that you can occupy.
So as I'm feeling my way through, I think it would be really cool to use the aspect of sound as well. Like, is there space for me to, I assume every surface may make a different sound or collection of sounds that I have to parse through.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I'm navigating those things, maybe there's an element of, I'm trying to think of like how it feels to play Operation. And that without that sort of annoying super buzz that you get hit with, what would it feel like to come up with a wrong answer? Like, how do you know how far off track you are?
It'd be interesting if you have different tools that you can use that are made of different materials that you kind of gain throughout the game. And so at first you have a wooden tool. And as you kind of knock it around on other types of objects, you can kind of get a sense of like where they are, but not a lot of information about them. But if you get like a metal tool, then it sounds like markedly different if you hit it against wood or against metal or glass. And you can start to get a sense of like what things are and what things can be broken through. And, you know, I don't want to make people sit there knocking on walls that they can't see all day long, but it could at least give you a sense of what the world is like around you. And maybe the space isn't immense. Maybe over time and with the new tools you acquire, you become quite familiar with the space around you. It's about more kind of solving like an escape room type puzzle to try to help you get out of a space that you've become very familiar with over time.
That's interesting. And so maybe instead of giving you sight and taking it away over and over, or like on repeat, maybe like you just slowly lose your vision. Like maybe the quests or the task can be more difficult at the beginning, but get like simpler and simpler because it expects you to, like, say over the course of 60 seconds, lose all your sight. So maybe if you're able to front load some of those more difficult asks, because you're like, okay, I'm going to have a real problem. If you have five things to find in a room, I'm going to have a real problem addressing 1, 2, and 3 without sight. So you can kind of choose and triage for the time available that you'll have sight to get some of that stuff done.
Obviously, I don't want people to just sit around waiting until they have sight to just play the entire game and then sit back for another 20 minutes or something while that portion
right.
get to be a really boring rhythm. But anyways, let's close that one down and let's come up with a name for it. You could call it blind panic. Is that a term that is used?
I think so. Is that a term that is used? It is. I don't know if it's a term I have used recently, but blind panic is a term I've heard.
Okay. Well, I think that fits.
Because it's also like the panic room, escape room. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. All right, cool. Well, blind panic it is then. Let's move now to the community. And we have a community pitch today.
Hey, you guys got sick of us reading from books. And or at least looking books up on Wikipedia. Finally, here we go.
That's more like it's a 21st century version of it. This comes from Rowan Atkinson, apparently.
Oh, wow, unbelievable.
He says, hello, I saw some gaming headlines that said Bean coming to Hitman 2, but it was Sean Bean. I was understandably disappointed. So I thought, what if there was a Mr. Bean game that used the engine, settings, or any other parts from Hitman? Cheers, P.S. Big fan of the show. Well, thank you, Mr. Atkinson.
I love the premise that Rowan Atkinson read that Bean was in something, but for some reason hadn't gotten any calls to that effect. No one even bothered to get in touch with him. They just
I'm in a video game. I wonder if my voice acting was any good.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, yeah. All right,
let's start that one off then.
You know, we just talked about kind of non-visual communication. Well, Mr. Bean is a little bit on the opposite spectrum, right? He's kind of non-verbal. So, yeah, what does a game look like with him as the hitman? Is that it, or is this pitching him as a target for Hitman?
You know, I think there's something genuinely funny about him being an elusive target in Hitman, where you get the mission briefing, like Agent 47, a contract was taken out on this unusual man. You have to assassinate him before he, whatever, causes some sort of a havoc in this restaurant. And I would like the idea of all the ways that you as the hitman can kill Mr. Bean would be ways that, like, he could die in his episodes. So, you know, you could like rig the power outlet at Harrod's. So when he unplugs the Christmas lights on Harrod's and plugs in his own to test them, he could zapped. Obviously, if you fail to assassinate him, then he could ride away on the couch on top of his car with that hitman exit level music playing.
I think potentially something that would be, I don't know, something to elaborate on or something that could be a fun addition to this whole thing is the idea that, you know, so often Mr. Bean is like narrowly avoiding murder. maybe not murder, but certainly like certain doom for his character. And the idea of like your traditional methods, like you can't use piano wire because like every time you go to strangle him, he just kind of like goes to pick up a penny off the ground, you know, like he's just narrowly avoiding it, which actually puts you in a bit of a, you know, could get caught situation. To which I'm sure he would say something like, oh, just run away. Let's disempower the hitman in this level and have him only have like really absurd options to, and maybe something that like seems inane, like just turn on the sink and just leave it running. And like that could potentially be the trigger for what takes down Bean.
Yeah. Of course, there's the episode where he's chasing his golf ball over the city, so you can use the already in Hitman, so it's very easy to program in the exploding golf ball. You can find it and make sure that it blows up in his face when he hits it. But this idea of like, well, I guess accidental death are already something in Hitman. Like that's already something you go for because you want to be undetected. And so you want to make it look like an accident, but introducing a more cartoony element to it, maybe some kind of cartoony, not that Mr. Bean is a cartoon, but he kind of adheres by the same rules. yeah. Some of this kind of cartoony logic.
What I like about, I was watching a Mr. Bean clip and you've probably seen it before, he checks into a hotel and he proceeds to take basically the entirety of his apartment out of his suitcase. He like puts up his own shades in the hotel and he does this whole song and dance. And I just thought it was interesting to maybe think like he has got some sort of special, maybe not powers, but abilities. Like he can do something really unexpected, like his... handkerchief could potentially take you out or something. I don't know what exactly it could be, but I love the idea of giving Bean the sort of the ability to transform sections of levels based on where he goes. Because he's causing his own chaos, right?
He could be kind of locked into a series of episode arcs and you're never really sure which one he's going to move on to next. And maybe there will be like three miniature episode arcs that he proceeds in throughout the course of the level. So as you try to set traps for him, you have to be thinking one step ahead because you never are quite sure where he's going to be headed next, whether he's going to the laundromat or whether he's going to be locking himself out of his hotel room completely naked.
Like the way he has to enter the level is with the beam of light, obviously, of course, right? Like the sky opens and he just drops down and dusts himself off and so enters Bean. So maybe you're like, he could drop in anywhere and you're kind of waiting to like hear the music or something or follow that music.
Wow. You know what would be interesting if this was like a multiplayer, like a 10 hitmen and... You're just in this giant map that's based on London or something like that. And you wait to see the beam of light and you're all just kind of like waiting and gather. It's like a Hitman Battle Royale. Here we go. We've done it. So it's a Hitman Battle Royale.
Yeah.
You enter the stage with maybe like 5 minutes to prepare. You're never quite sure. It's a lot of time. Sometimes it's not much time. And you're trying to scavenge weapons and things that you can use to perform your murders. And then at some random point, you can hear the music and see the beam of light in the sky. And that indicates the direction that you should be going to try to find Mr. Bean. And, the streets are crowded. And so he's not super easy to find. And so, but, he's still very conspicuous in his actions. And so it's up to you to not only assassinate Mr. Bean, but to be the first one to do it, to try to scope out who the other hitmen are, because the hitmen are randomly generated in every round, so you're never quite sure which of the NPCs. So you can choose to blend into the crowds, and or you can try to scope each other out to try to lessen the competition. Ah, I like this.
And so Bean is, once he lands... Is he perpetually just the target, or is he? I mean, I imagine he can also sort of cause his own chaos that if you get wrapped up in, you get taken out. Like, Bean is leaving such disarray in his trail that, like, you could potentially fall from a simple,
diving board or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or, even a sneeze of his is, something like that.
Yeah, I don't want to make it look like he's leaving, like, a huge trail of destruction. I like when he's more of just like a menace, or not like an intentional menace, but just like a buffoon who just kind of like makes people upset rather than like actually destroys things. But yeah, you kind of want to make him a little difficult to track, which if he's leaving a huge trail of destruction behind is kind of like an arrow that points directly to him. And so this is kind of like a hunting game in a way. It's just that the target that you're after is such a comedic foil for all of these sneaky hitmen that are all around.
Yeah, you're actually looking around, and then, you know, you find like his stuffed animal, like his bear, teddy bear, and like, oh, Bean is near. Like, I found Teddy. I know that he's in the vicinity.
That's right. He's taking his trigonometry test.
So now we have many hitmen, one Bean, all things kind of. I like this too. And now we dress up the hitmen all as like old London police officers. So, you know, you get that sort of
you know,
BBC.
I want the hitmen to not know who each other are, because they are the competition essentially. And so, you know, you can either win by being the last hitman standing and taking your time with the kill, I guess, if you get the kill soon enough, or, you know, you either, yeah, you try to get it first, or you try to take out the competition. And so, you know, to kind of like spy party, you don't want the opponents to know who you are. And so you want to move inconspicuously. You want to get in and get out. You have to escape the stage after you assassinate him. So if a bunch of players have eyes on him, then maybe you need to create a distraction or get him in a secluded area and try to find a back way out. It could be difficult, but I see some clever ways to do this.
How do we bring, or do we at all get Mr. Bean's car involved in this? Could there be, it is a battle royale, could there be vehicles? Could the Bean car be indestructible, perhaps?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course it did get run over by a tank in one episode, but I have a feeling that there's not that
that it was
strong
back the next episode,
yeah, right.
Probably.
And then there's the three-wheel car, the big blue boxy one that Mr. Bean hates so much, which I guess you could use. But I guess maybe that's the only other vehicle. And so if you use it, it's like tempting fate, because people would know who you are. And Mr. Bean, if he's on the road at the same time, would find some way to like really screw you over, knocking
that's
your
perfect.
Car over or something.
What else can come in from the Mr. Beaniverse? Is it just really him and Teddy? Is there other characters ever in that show?
Well, there's his girlfriend, who he, I guess, makes terribly frustrated time and time again. But I mean, anyways, we are coming up on the end of the time period, but I think even if people aren't interested in the Mr. Bean aspect of this, I think the Hitman Battle Royale thing is a super cool idea. You know, it's like the Assassin's Creed multiplayer, but with more of a directed goal. And I'm really into that. So, you know, if you like the Mr. Bean, great. If you don't, then there's still a cool video game idea in there to explore. So maybe we can explore that more sometime. But for now, let's close it down. Let's come up with a name. Obviously, Hitman, Elusive Target, Mr. Bean is a little uninteresting. So let's see if we can come up with some sort of a bean pun. I feel like I'm very close. A bean bag, but like a body bag.
Okay.
You know, you want bean bagged? Yeah, that's getting there. Bean bagged.
Bean bagged. Bag.
I don't know.
Bag bean is actually probably another available option to us in that scenario.
Bean bagged and tagged.
Bean bagged and tagged. And then the cover is just Teddy with an eye missing and like Mr. Bean's foot with the like tag on it. I feel like the Hitman series has used that iconography before, but let's dip into the well.
That's silly enough, I think, to fit in with the Hitman series and what they have going for them. So, which as of the time of listening to this, Hitman is out for those who pre-ordered the gold version this coming Friday. So I'll be playing Hitman 2.
For those who pre-ordered the gold version, oh my God, video games in 2018.
I know, it's like, it's the worst, but I felt like if I'm ever going to buy like a very nice edition of a game, it would be a Hitman game, because I just want every little bit of content that they can give me.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you get, they're bringing all the Hitman 1 levels in too, right?
Yeah, it's really nice as well. I hope that they allow me to transfer my save. Like, I like those levels, but I've...
Don't want
like,
to do it
between
again.
Buying the game on PS4, PC, and Xbox One, like I have a suit only silent assassin most of those levels multiple times now.
Oh my God. I got to just sit down with you and you teach me how to play that game one day.
Sometimes it's just memorizing a course through the through the level. It's not so much thinking on your feet, but you know, I like to think that I'm a pretty decent hitman, but I guess we'll find out with a new game that I'm not practiced up on.
Fair enough. Today's episode has been brought to you by Hitman by IO Interactive. No, that's not true, but
it was brought to you by Super Smash Bros.
It definitely was that.
47 and 47 of his closest friends.
Exactly. IO, do you think you're better than Nintendo? Get on this sponsor wagon.
That's right, Nintendo. Anyways, that was sent in by Rowan Atkinson. Thank you very much, Mr. Atkinson. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. If you wish to send in a pitch of your own, then please do so. You can email them in at playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at playwrightcast, or you can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, from the album Blue Noise. It's very good and you should listen to it.
Q, take us out on a miniature idea today.
So my pitch this week is courtesy of my fiance, Jessica. She pitched to me a Miami Vice themed cops and robbers boat racing game.
Oh, that's neat. Kind of like Sleeping Dogs had some nice boat combat in there and some Grand Theft Auto. And we'll catch you next week, everyone.
Bye.